We're joined by James Fallows to talk about the news this week. Jim is the national correspondent for the Atlantic Monthly. Good to have you in the studio with us.
Thanks very much.
We just aired a 10-minute version of our interview with Paul Wolfowitz. We actually spoke to him for about 40 minutes, and that extended version is at our website, npr.org. But Jim, you've followed him for many years. You've written a profile on him. What are your thoughts about what he said?
I think there's a policy aspect to what he said, which we can dispose of sort of concisely, and then a personal aspect, which I think is richer and will be with him and us for a long time. On the policy aspect, the argument he's making that too many Americans are just dismissing the cause of reform around the world, I think is not really a sustainable or central argument. For example, if you have the President of the United States who ran essentially against Paul Wolfowitz's administration speaking in Cairo about reform for the Arab world in partnership with the U.S., I think it's hard to say that the sentiment of disengaging has taken over. The personal story, I think, is the one I could almost sense while listening to this clip just now of Mr. Wolfowitz realizing what the rest of his life was going to consist of, that none of us likes the idea that our role in history is going to be defined by things we don't choose ourselves, but his role in the Iraq War is going to be that, as it was, as Vietnam was for Robert McNamara.
And he will be asked this for the rest of his life, probably.
I think that is the case, unless he confines himself to friendly news outlets, which he can't do forever and ever.
One of the wars that Paul Wolfowitz was involved with as Deputy Defense Secretary was, of course, Afghanistan. This week, reports out of Afghanistan of a NATO airstrike that may have killed as many as 90 civilians. It's still unclear what happened. These kinds of airstrikes were not supposed to happen under the new U.S. commander in Afghanistan, General Stan McChrystal, who said that he wanted to focus on counterinsurgency.
This is a military problem in Afghanistan. It's connected to a political problem in the United States. President Obama, as a candidate, ran saying that Afghanistan was the good war that the U.S. should have pursued as opposed to the bad war in Iraq. And now there's some different kind of case that has to be made for it, not what we should have done in 2002, but what we should do in 2009 and 2010. And to the extent this becomes an uncontrollable, casualty-filled scenario for people in Afghanistan, for allied troops and all the rest, becomes a much more complicated situation for the U.S. and for the administration.
And it's hard as well for him because of his political base.
It is, because it was a natural appeal to the Democratic Party and the anti-Bush administration base during the campaign to say this is where we should have fought the war against the 9/11 terrorists, not in Baghdad, not in Iraq. And now when it's a forward-looking thing to say what is the positive case for being there in the long run, what would victory mean, that becomes, I think that will emerge as a real test for the administration.
Jim, another story caught our attention this week. It has to do with former Attorney General John Ashcroft and immunity from prosecution over decisions to detain American citizens after 9/11.
Yes, there was a U.S. citizen who converted to Islam, and his Islamic name became Abdullah al-Kid, who was detained not as a suspect but as a material witness when he was trying to travel to Saudi Arabia in, I believe, 2003, detained for a number of weeks, prevented from traveling for a year or two, and a three-judge panel of the Ninth Circuit on the West Coast found former Attorney General Ashcroft personally liable for those decisions. And this is an open-ended case because the decision said that no position of responsibility could exempt somebody from theoretical liability. This will certainly be appealed to the Supreme Court, but at face value, it's a quite consequential judgment.
I mean, presumably there are other people from the Bush administration who will look at this decision and worry.
Of course. And there's a long historical pattern this fits into. There are wars, there are disagreements, there are conflicts. One side wins, one side loses. When I was living in Japan long ago, the way they referred to the Tokyo war crimes trials was as victor's justice. And there is some line that within our own change of administrations in the U.S. we have to strike between finding people accountable and not having people run for cover and be fearful about what they do when they're in power.
Finally, Jim, to health care, there's a piece of audio floating around out there, and it's Ronald Reagan. And he was talking about Medicare. This is in the early 1960s, and he talks about the dangers of what he calls socialized medicine. Let's take a listen.
One of the traditional methods of imposing statism or socialism on a people has been by way of medicine. It's very easy to disguise a medical program as a humanitarian project.
Jim, it sounds very similar to the debate taking place today.
Indeed, and has resonance for me because I actually remember hearing this in real time. I was a kid in Southern California. My dad was a small-town doctor when this Medicare debate was happening in the early 60s. And I can tell you that the fear of socialized medicine and crossing this line was at least as intense, at least as sort of fervent then as it was is now, 40-plus years later. So perhaps that's a healing example that it's possible to get past these real frictions like we're having now.
James Fallows is the national correspondent for The Atlantic. Jim, thanks for coming in.
My pleasure. Thank you.